Welcome, everybody, to Give Me 5 130, a webinar training on how to self-certify for participation in the SBA's new Women-Owned Small Business Federal Contract Training Program that, for the first time ever, allows federal contracts to be set aside for women-owned small businesses. So it's a great opportunity to talk about that today. My name is Michael Fravel, Program and Education Coordinator for Women Impacting Public Policy, also known as WIP. For those of you who are not familiar with WIP, Women Impacting Public Policy is the voice for women in business in our nation's capital. We're a national, nonpartisan public policy organization that advocates for and on behalf of women in business to strengthen their voice in the legislative process, and we represent over 500,000 women business owners, including over 50 business organizations. The Give Me 5 program, named after the 5% federal contracting goal set by Congress, is a national program from Women Impacting Public Policy and American Express Open designed to provide business education tools for women business owners to help them apply for and secure federal procurement opportunities. Before we present today's course, we have a few brief technical notes. We are recording this presentation, including the question and answer segment, and a podcast recording will be sent along with a brief survey to all registered attendees of today's call. We like to keep these sessions interactive, and we invite your questions as the session is delivered. However, due to the large volume of attendees today, we have muted the lines for audio quality. During the presentation, if you do have any questions for our instructor, please feel free to send your question immediately via the chat function on the right side of the webinar, or you'll be able to ask your question during the extended question and answer segment at the end of the training. And we'll hold off on most of the questions for that question and answer segment today. Since this is a part two, we want to make sure we get times to answer questions from people. I will try opening the lines for attendees to ask your questions out loud at the end, but I do ask that in the meantime you do not put your phone on hold, so the rest of us will not have to listen to hold music on the line. If you do need to step away, please hang up and dial in again when you're ready to rejoin the session. For optimal viewing, you can click the full screen icon in the upper right of the display window. Before we turn this over to Angela, I would like to introduce you to the president of Women Impacting Public Policy, Barbara Kassoff, a longtime advocate for the WSB program, who joins us today to kick off the session.
Thank you, Michael, and welcome, everybody. I'm really so pleased to be able to introduce this program to you. From the very founding of WIP more than 10 years ago, we advocated strongly for the Women's Procurement Program. And the recent passage and implementation of the WOSB program is a huge victory and benchmark for the women-owned business community. You, all of you, and many of the organizations worked so hard for this. We all stood together with one voice, and Congress listened as a result. The program marks a significant change in the procurement landscape and therefore the opportunities for you. Today's course is a revisitation of the subject of how to certify as a woman-owned small business. Angela first delivered this session in March, and since that time we've had just an overwhelming response and a number of questions about participation in the program. So it's wonderful to have such a great response, but our next and most very critical step is to make sure that this program works. We must make sure that now that we have a program, that you are able to demonstrate that you're ready and able to compete for government contracts. We intend on providing you the tools and resources you need, so please take advantage of it. And if you're an experienced contractor and can help us out, please make sure that you're in contact with Michael. The strength of our program is that our members are the educators and the mentors, and they can share with you the successes and the strategies. So today I'm pleased to introduce our today's course instructor, a WIP national partner, Angela Dingell. Angela is founder and president and CEO of Vexnilo, a management and business consulting firm that specializes in strategic assessments and information technology management. Founded in 2002, her company delivers comprehensive services designed to prevent customers with the visibility and control needed to make critical decisions in a dynamic business environment. Angela is a certified management consultant with over 20 years' experience in business leadership, software engineering, and quality assurance. And Angela is also co-chair of the diversity committee at WIP and serves on the WIP Executive Advisory Board. So, Angela, I turn it all over to you now.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you for everyone that's participating on the call today. I want to thank WIP and American Express Open for providing the Give Me Five training so that women business owners such as myself and the others that are here on the call can learn more about ways to do business with the federal government. There's plenty of funds available, and we need to get our 5% of it, so thank you very much. For some of you, this may be a repeat, and for some of you, this may be a first time. But today we're going to talk about how to self-certify for the Women-Owned Small Business Federal Contracting Program. Our objectives for the course are to help you to determine your eligibility, update your CCR and ORCA profiles, show you how to submit your documents to the SBA's Women-Owned Small Business Program repository, and give you an update on third-party certifications for the Women-Owned Small Business Program. This is quite a victory for us after 11 years. So just by a show on the chat, can I get an indication of how many people are already registered and active in CCR? And while we're waiting on that, I'm seeing some responses come in. So we've got several folks that are registered in CCR. Actually, quite a nice turnout there. Secondly, how many of you have started the process of trying to get registered into the Women-Owned Small Business repository? So I'm seeing a few folks that have not begun the registration process. So for those of you that are not currently registered in the CCR, this Training 130 is not designed to teach you the initial steps to register. We've made the assumption that you are registered in the CCR, so we'll just be covering the points that are germane to the Women-Owned Small Business Program as opposed to reviewing all of the CCR registration. There is another WIP course that will show you how to do that, and you can go to the Give Me Five site or to the WIP site to get additional information about that. So with the course goals underway, I'll get started here. So as Barbara mentioned, effective February 4th, the Women-Owned Small Business Federal Contract Program was put into effect. It provides us with equal access to federal contracting opportunities for women-owned small businesses and a designation called economically disadvantaged women-owned small businesses. This is not wide open to all women-owned small businesses. It's specific to 83 NAICS codes. There are a percentage of the NAICS codes that are for women-owned small businesses that are underrepresented, and then there's another set for women-owned small businesses that are substantially underrepresented. And WIP has a listing of those courses that we can make available to you as a part of the follow-on information that we provide as a result of this course. So this Women-Owned Small Business Contracting Program allows contracting officers to set aside specific federal contractors for women-owned small businesses and economically disadvantaged women-owned businesses. It does not, however, allow them to do sole source contract awards. So it's slightly different than what you would typically see with something like the 8A program. So next we'll go over the steps that are required to participate in the program. I like to say it's easy as 1, 2, 3. If you go to the SBA website, they actually describe it as a 5-step process. My three steps are determining your eligibility, registering or updating your CCR, and uploading your supporting documentation. They add two additional steps. They first ask that you read the materials that are available on the SBA's website about the Woman-Owned Small Business Program. They've got lots of very easy-to-understand information. There's a compliance guide for women-owned small businesses. There's a contracting guide for contract officers. There's a fact sheet as well as a frequently asked questions sheet that kind of explain the program to you in layman terms and answer some questions that you might have about it. So that's the SBA's first step. And their final step is to update your ORCA, to self-certify there. And we're going to cover that as a part of this particular training today. Determining your eligibility is pretty easy. As a woman-owned small business, you have to be both small and then be unconditionally and directly owned and controlled by one or more women who are United States citizens, and it has to be not less than 50%. And we'll talk a little bit about that in more detail as we go to the next slide. So for unconditionally and directly owned or controlled, a woman-owned small business, for the woman, her ownership must be direct. And by that, it means it can't be subject to any conditions. The woman must manage the day-to-day operations. She has to make any of the long-term decisions, and she must be able to provide documentation that demonstrates that she meets these requirements. The way that they are looking at this particular requirement is by determining whether or not there are any factors in the documentation that defines the organization. For example, your articles of organization, your corporate bylaws, any of your operating agreements, to see whether or not someone else has the ability to make decisions that are final and binding upon the organization. They'll also look at things like your bank signature cards to make sure that the woman has the ability to actually conduct financial transactions on behalf of the business without requiring additional approval or input from anyone else. There's a second designation called economically disadvantaged. For that one, you first need to meet the requirements as a woman-owned small business. And then additionally, for those women that are economically disadvantaged, it's three thresholds. Your personal net worth cannot exceed $750,000. Your three-year average gross income cannot exceed $350,000. So that's the average over 3 years. And the fair market value of all of your assets cannot exceed $6 million. There are additional details in the compliance guide that explain how they are calculating your net worth and how they are calculating your average gross income and fair market value of all of your assets.
I don't really have any questions, but I know we've already uploaded all of our documents.
Well, I want to
the only
know.
Thing that I'd be interested in is...
So I'm seeing that your slides are not advancing? It looks like your slides are not advancing, so I'm going to close my browser and reopen it and see if that will help you all to see the slides.
Angela, hi. I think since you're the presenter, since you just closed the slide deck, it'll close the session. But if you log back in, we can all log back in again.
Okay. So which one do I do? Share presentation again?
Yeah, go ahead and share presentation. And sorry about this. We just had a minor technical issue here. For everybody who is just on the line, you can go ahead and log back in by the link that was sent to your email. Apologize for that. This is just a brief intermission, everybody. We'll be getting right back on track in a moment. and I hope everybody keeps pace with the documents now. Just as a note, if you're attending and if the slides are not advancing, as an attendee, you can close and reopen your browser, and that will bring you up to speed with where the rest of us are on the presentation.
So I'm going to take us back to where we were.
And sorry about that, Angela. I think that was my fault because I was responding to an attendee named Angela who was asking a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a little misunderstanding, but we'll go ahead and get right back on track.
All right, so let me get us to the slide that we were on. All right. So we should be on slide 11, determining your eligibility. So I'm going to assume everyone is there with me and get going again.
I see slide 11 right now.
Okay, great. So we talked about what it means to be a woman-owned small business, and then there's a secondary designation, an economically disadvantaged woman-owned business. And for that, you need to both meet the requirements as a woman-owned small business, but additionally, there are certain thresholds that the SBA will be looking for in terms of your income or net worth. So your personal net worth cannot be more than $750,000. And they will take into account if any of you are currently participating in the 8A program, you know that you have to submit a personal financial statement every year, and it's that same type of information where they're going to look at your assets and liabilities to determine your personal net worth. They'll look at your average gross income over the past 3 years, and that can't exceed $350,000. And then they'll look at the fair market value of all of your assets. And those cannot exceed $6 million. Excuse me, and the program compliance guide will walk you through how they make that determination, whether or not your spouse's income is taken into consideration or property that you own with your spouse when they are determining the value of all of your assets. So that's basically an overview of the Woman-Owned Small Business Procurement Program and how you determine your eligibility. So now let's look at the Central Contractor Registry. So I know that some of you said you've already registered in the CCR. For those of you that have not, the CCR is the government's method of, they use the CCR as their method of determining your payment status. It is a database of all contractors that are registered to do business with the federal government. It's really important as it relates to programs such as this one because the government contracting officers go into the CCR to look to see which women-owned small businesses and any business are eligible to participate in specific contract procurements that they are considering releasing contracts for. And so the information that you have in CCR is really important both in terms of opportunity as well as getting paid. It is mandated by the Federal Acquisition Regulation. If you look at Clause 4.11, it requires an active registration in the CCR prior to the award of a contract or an agreement. And I talk about this in the other class, but you do need to leave your CCR registration active until you've received your last payment for any federal contract that you have, because that is how they do their payment determination. I see some questions. We're going to take questions at the end. So an active registration in CCR means a few things. It means that all the mandatory fields have been validated. Your record, when it's active, is going to be marked with the active registration button that you see on the screen here. And you have to have indicated that your taxpayer identification number is valid. Once you've completed the taxpayer identification the first time, unless you change your tax ID, you won't have to validate that anymore. So from your initial registration, it's just a matter of keeping your CCR record updated, and you do have a requirement to do that on a regular basis. So in order to update your CCR profile, you're going to log into CCR, and you're going to need to click Validate or Save Data at the bottom of each of the registration pages that you want to make a modification to in order to activate the update. It's always good when you're going into, let's say you're going in to do this woman-owned small business, it's good to take a look through your CCR record as a whole, because there's information that may have changed since the last time that you updated your CCR record, or the points of contact within your organization may have changed, and your business contact is going to be really important with respect to the government making contact with your organization. In your CCR record, there are going to be three types of data that you can enter. It's data that's required, data that's view only, or data that is missing or invalid. We'll only be looking today at the information that you need to update for your woman-owned small business. The view only data about your business is going to be populated from Dun & Bradstreet, and you won't be able to make any changes in the CCR record. If you do have any changes, you want to contact Dun & Bradstreet directly, and they'll make the changes to your address or any other identifying information about your corporation. That's going to be under the General Information tab within CCR. You are required on an annual basis to go in and validate your average annual receipts and the number of employees for your main location and all of the affiliate locations. There's an option under the general tab for opting in and out about information. I would advocate that you should opt in so that contracting officers and others might be able to share your CCR information so that you have a broader opportunity for government contracts. It's not required for you to opt in, but I would suggest that you do so. So the section that's going to apply to the woman-owned small business program is going to be under corporate information. That's another area that's required information. And the key is that you're going to have to check the box. So there are two boxes that will be applicable to the woman-owned small business program. One essentially says woman-owned small business. And the second, if you are eligible for that, would be the economically disadvantaged woman-owned small business. So you'd need to navigate to the corporate link within CCR, click those two boxes, and then click validate/save data. And as long as you feel comfortable with that information, I'd also suggest that you take a look at your goods and services. These are going to be your NAICS codes. You can add or change any of your NAICS codes at any time. There's nothing that precludes you from bidding on a procurement that has a NAICS code that you have not listed. However, for the NAICS codes that have been identified as a part of the woman-owned small business program to be set aside, you want to make sure that you have those NAICS codes, if they're applicable to your business, in your CCR record. Because, again, the contracting officer, should they decide to set aside a contract, will be using that information that comes from your CCR record to make the determination on whether or not they have enough people to set aside the contract. And they use what's called the rule of two. They need two or more small businesses that satisfy their requirements. Once you finish updating your CCR record, it takes anywhere from 28 to 48 hours for that information to populate. The next thing that you would need to do is to update your ORCA. Your ORCA is your online representations and certifications. If you've ever submitted a proposal for a federal contract, this is typically your Section K in the solicitation. Some years ago, the government mandated via FAR Clause 52.204-8 that the government more and more often replace the paper-based reps and certs with the online ORCA. Occasionally you'll see in a procurement where the ORCA is one of the options, and then there may be a few other provisions that particular agency wants you to certify to. The thing to remember about ORCA is that you can't make any changes to your ORCA record until your CCR update is complete. So if you are a new CCR registrant, you must wait until that process is completed before you can do your ORCA. And for those people that are doing the update, although you don't have to, you would want to wait until the data flows over into ORCA so that you only have to make the modification one time. So the things that you need to update an ORCA record or to create an initial ORCA record is going to be an active CCR registration. You're going to need an MPIN. That comes from your CCR registration when you're creating your initial CCR record, you will create this PIN, and that's what you use to get to your ORCA, and you also need your DUNS number. And if you don't know your DUNS number, you can go to Dun & Bradstreet and look that information up. Very similar to the process in the CCR database. At the when you get to each of the pages within ORCA, you're going to need to click Save and Continue Questionnaire until you get to the final page where you will save and continue to your certification. So you want to check all of your boxes that are read-only, as well as any of the boxes where you're indicating an answer, and then submit certification to activate the update. So for the women-owned small business representations, there are a few clauses that are going to be applicable. FAR Clause 52219-1 is your small business program representations, so you'll want to review that and make sure that the NAICS codes and your eligibility as a small business is appropriately indicated in that section, as well as in Section 52219-22. Those are for your small disadvantaged business concerns. And the other two clauses there, 52-213-3 is your overall representation of the commercial items that you offer. Those are going to be your NAICS codes. And the woman-owned small business, other than small, is another area you just want to look at to make sure that all the information that you have in those sections is appropriate based on how you're certifying your organization. And then the final step in the process is for you to self-certify via the Women-Owned Small Business Program Repository. It's a repository that's maintained by the Small Business Administration. It's a secure web-based environment. It houses all of the documentation that supports your certification, as well as, and we'll talk about this later, as well as any third-party certifications. And we'll talk about which documents you need to upload into that repository in order to compile that supporting documentation. It's accessible to women-owned small businesses, both just plain and economically disadvantaged, the SBA, and the contracting officer community, and we'll talk about that as well. And it allows the contracting officer to access your documents and review your eligibility prior to making a contract award. So the things that you're going to need are proof of citizenship, and so you have to be a United States citizen in order to be eligible for this program. And proof of citizenship is going to be your typical unexpired passport, your birth certificate, or other information such as that. For your business, it's going to be the Articles of Organization or Articles of Incorporation and any amendments. You'll also need to upload your operating agreement, bylaws, stock certificates, your stock ledger, and voting agreements. And the reason for uploading these documents is that they're going to look through those to determine whether or not anyone else is able to control or have influence over the woman's ability to make final and binding decisions for the company. They'll also look at any partnership agreements and amendments. There's a woman-owned program certification, which is essentially a document that you're going to sign off and upload into the repository that says that you understand the provisions of the program and that you're certifying that the information you've submitted is true and correct. And then finally, SBA Form 413. Again, for those of you that are already members of either the 8A program or the economically disadvantaged program, this is a form that you're familiar with already because it's required on an annual basis. It's a report of your assets and liabilities that they use to determine your net worth. So let's look at the repository. The SBA has a site that if you're eligible for HubZone or for 8A, you're already using this system. It's called GLS. It's a general login system, and they have modified the system for the Women-Owned Small Business Program so that you can log in and get your information into the repository. If you already have an ID that you're using for the SBA's 8A program or HubZone program, you would use that same login information to access your Women-Owned Small Business Program repository. If you do not, you'll see an option on the left-hand side, Instructions for GLS. If you click on that, it will give you the instructions that you need to get an account on the system. once you've logged into the system, you're going to be presented with a set of terms and conditions that have not been displayed here, but it essentially asks you whether or not you accept the terms and conditions of using the site. It's a government site, and so they want you to be aware of that before you enter any information. If you click on that, the screen that you see on will be presented, and you're going to need to click access to gain access to the repository. If you are already using this system for one of the other programs, the existing programs will be listed there. And for those of you that have never used it before, there's not going to be much information that makes any sense. So you'll go up, there's an access button up on the second row at the top. You would click that button, and once you click it, an option will appear on the screen that will allow you to select your business from the Women-Owned Small Business Program repository. And you can see that there at the lower part of the screen. And then you would click Submit. Once you've clicked Submit there, the repository will show up as an option on that screen that had a list of things that you could select. You'll select that. There is some, there is a help option that's available. That's one of the buttons that's available on the top screen. The next thing that you would want to do is click the option to upload. So once you click upload, you would be presented with a disclaimer that you can read very quickly. And then you want to go to the next screen, which is where you begin to upload your documents. So the list of documents that you need, what I provided you on the prior screen was just a subset of that. If you look at the compliance guide or look at the fact sheet, it'll tell you which specific documents that you need, and you would just begin to upload them here. So if you look down at the bottom, there's a button there to add a file. You click Add File to upload a new document. The program repository only accepts PDFs and zip files. So it's not going to accept a Word document. It's not going to accept a PowerPoint presentation. It's not going to accept an Excel spreadsheet. So you're limited to a PDF or to a zip file. So what you want to do is select the type of document that you're uploading. So let's say, for example, you were uploading your Articles of Incorporation. You would just scroll down through that list, select Articles of Incorporation, and then you would click Add Files. I know the last time we did this, there were some questions about how to remove files. You select the file, and there's an option there for you to remove the selected file. And once you've had an opportunity to upload all of the files, let's say there are 8 or 10 or so of them, then you would click Upload Files, which is down on your lower right-hand part of the screen. You'll at that point have an opportunity to review your submission so that you could see which documents have been uploaded, the total number of files that have been uploaded. It'll tell you if you've uploaded any documents that are in a file format that it can't read. And then the next thing that we want to talk about are your third-party certifications. Currently, the SBA has not approved any third-party certifiers. At some point in the future, instead of self-certifying, if you have been certified as a woman-owned small business by another organization that has been approved by them, you would be able to upload the documentation associated with that third-party certification as opposed to uploading all of the individual information about your firm. So just to review quickly, the three things that you need to do, and I'll say 5 for the SBA, is make sure that you read over the documentation that's available at the SBA website. You need to be registered in CCR, and you'll have to go in and make some updates to your CCR registration that are appropriate for this program. You'll need to update your online reps and certs. You'll have to upload your supporting documentation into the woman-owned small business repository. And with that, I will begin to take questions.
Thank you, Angela. And what we're going to do is I have a few questions that have already come in on the chat. I'm going to go ahead and ask a couple of those, and then I'll try opening the lines for people to be able to ask their questions. The first question comes from Michelle, and she had two questions that are very similar. First, a clarification. Economically disadvantaged is different from 8A. So maybe you can explain a little bit about the difference. And also, what has to be filed and where is information for economically disadvantaged designation?
Okay, so economically disadvantaged in some ways is very similar to 8A, and in other ways it's different. The similarity that it has with 8A is if you have been designated as a small disadvantaged business through the 8A program, that suffices as your eligibility as an economically disadvantaged woman-owned small business under this program. The difference between the two programs, though, is that 8As can be sole-sourced, and the woman-owned small business program contract actions cannot be sole sourced. So if you have already been designated as economically disadvantaged under 8A, you don't have to justify or certify that you are economically disadvantaged under this program. And I hope that answered the question.
Thanks, Angela. And we had one more question that had come in. When you're calculating your net worth for qualifying, as I expect this means to qualify as economically disadvantaged, does that include an IRA as well?
Let me check just to be sure, but they are going to look at what you have in your retirement program, in your retirement accounts. So let's see. The only thing that's going to be excluded. The only thing that's going to be excluded out of your IRA is going to be funds that are unavailable until retirement age. So if you have funds from your IRA that you've withdrawn early, those will count towards your personal worth. Everything else that's in your IRA will not be counted in your personal net worth.
Thank you. And we're having some more questions come in. A couple of questions from Debbie and Justin. Debbie says, you mentioned another class. Can you explain? And I can actually just mention, on giveme5.com under resources, we have a course that explains the very introduction to CCR and how you get registered. It includes a checklist of everything you'll need for registering on the CCR as well. So if you haven't done that yet, that's a really good place to start. And also, Justin had a question, where are WSB set-asides listed, and how do we make sure we're receiving solicitations?
For the most part, the federal government lists all of their solicitations and procurement opportunities through FedBizOps. If you have an account on FedBizOps, or if you have an account, you can do a subscription so that you receive emails whenever solicitations that are of interest to you are posted there. Otherwise, just as a person in the general public, you are able to search FedBizOps on a regular basis without any additional requirements, so you can go in and look for them yourselves. I've only seen one so far that's been designated. The government, when they implemented the program, they said it would take them a little bit of time to get everything done, so they just recently finished the changes that they needed to make to ORCA to be able to accommodate this new federal ruling. And then it's going to take an education on the part of contracting officers to even know that this is an eligible set-aside program for them. So for those of you that get smart on it and understand the program as you're meeting with your customers and talking to them about it, I would advise you to make them aware that it's an option that's available to them. And I also would encourage women business owners to network with one another, because any time that you can look at a procurement that you think should be set aside, and there are two or more women-owned businesses that think that they can compete for it, then that's a compelling argument for them to set it aside. So FedBizOps would be the site that you want to go to and set up an account.
Thank you. And I would like to mention that we will be following up to this presentation as more is coming out about this WSV program. We will be having an update on ways that you can approach contracting officers and let them know that you're a women-owned small business and find ways to use that to your advantage. We have another course that will be coming up on May 25th that will talk about that. Angelo, I'm going to try to open up the lines. We may get some audio feedback, and it might not be possible, but I would like people to be able to ask their questions if possible. So bear with me for a sec. I'm going to see if we're going to be able to do this here.
We're done. I don't know. It says Richmond Property. Richmond Property should be an investor.
Okay, so what I've done is I've set up the line right now so that if you would like to be heard to ask a question, you can push *6 on your keypad. That will unmute your line, and then you can push *6 to remute your line. We do have some questions that are still streaming in on the chat. I'm going to ask one more, but I'm also going to allow people to jump on and ask their questions directly if they choose to. So Angela asks, the articles of incorporation you listed, does that mean you have to be a corporation, or is an LLC okay?
No, an LLC is okay. I was just trying to save space on the slide. So if you're a corporation or an LLC or a partnership, whatever legal entity you are, they're just looking for the documentation that established the incorporation of your firm with whatever state government that you worked with.
I have a question. Hello.
Hi.
Okay, my name is Desiree. My question is, I have completed the CCR and the ORCA. Is it wise for me to pay someone to complete the certification? Because I try to follow along. I had screen issues, and it seems as though even though I've completed CCR and ORCA, there's still a lot required for me to become certified.
Not a lot, and I would not advise that you pay anyone, because all you're going to do is upload documentation that you already have. If you have a firm that's legally defined to do business, you're just uploading your documentation that proves that. So if you're a corporation, you've got articles of incorporation, you've got if you're using a corporate banking account, then you're going to have bank signature cards. That's the type of information that they're asking for, and it's just a matter of going to their website. And if you have those in soft copy and just uploading them, I would not advise that you pay anyone that's not already on your staff to do it.
Okay, so I have all of that, and perhaps it's finding it on the website, because I've gone to the SBA website several times. It seems awfully complicated to move forward from where I am. So what site am I going to upload these documents?
The web address is https://eweb, so E-W-E-B, .sba.gov/GLS for general login system.
Okay, and that
again,
will prompt me to upload all of the information that I have.
Right. If you don't have a login there already, then there's an option on the left-hand side that provides instructions for GLS. That's how you request an account.
Okay, I do have a login.
Okay, if you have a login.
Here's my last question. Oftentimes I'm asked if I'm certified, and because I have the CCR and the ORCA, I may or may not respond yes. Is that an inaccurate response?
That's an inaccurate response. First of all, you need to know which certification they're asking you for. And then secondly, you're only certified.
Women-owned business certified.
Okay. So that's this one that they're discussing. As soon as you get this information loaded up, as soon as you get your documentation loaded up into there, the SBA will follow up with you and let you know that you're good.
Okay. I will attempt that again. Thank you.
And for anybody who wants to have that website that Angela just mentioned. I will go ahead and send that along with the podcast and presentation of this training as well. Angela, I'm going to let people ask more questions, but I did see one in here that I really thought was a good question. If Mangala asks, if we graduated from 8A, are we still considered EDWSB?
It's going to depend on those factors that I indicated. So the eligibility requirements for the 8A are different than the eligibility requirements for this program, and it's going to all boil down to your personal net worth, your average gross income, and the fair market value of all of your assets. So what makes it easy when you're an 8A is instead of having to prove that, they just essentially pull the information from your 8A small disadvantaged business certification, and they allow that to be your justification. If you've graduated from that program, it doesn't necessarily mean that you've graduated out of your NAICS code, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you are now economically sound.
Thank you. I want to give an opportunity to anybody else to ask a question. Otherwise, I can ask some more from the chat. Okay. Michelle asks, does annual gross income include profits from corporations such as S Corp?
Let me check. It's going to include any bonuses or any stock that you've been given in lieu of cash. If you are an S Corporation, if you can provide documentation demonstrating that your income that you receive was reinvested into the business or was distributed solely for the purpose of paying taxes for the business, then that will be excluded from your average gross income. So I hope that's clear, but they will include any bonuses and any stock values that you receive. However, if you receive income and you either use it to pay taxes or you reinvest it back into the business, then that will be excluded.
Angela, I have a question. My name is Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I've done this woman-owned small business certification on SBA, and mm-hmm. I found that the questionnaire, the Form 2413, is very confusing. Who would you recommend that I contact to make sure that I've answered the questions correctly?
You mean Form 413? The personal financial statement?
No. No. There's that additional woman-owned small business certification form that's required. The questions that you verify.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a five-page document.
Yes, yes, yes.
Some of those questions I found were very confusing, almost like a true-false, where part of the question sounded true and then the other mm-hmm. part of the question sounded false.
Right. Now, did you have a chance to look through the compliance guide?
Yes.
Okay. If yes. that was not clear, if after reading the compliance guide you still had some questions, I'd first start with calling your local SBA office.
Okay.
Because there should be someone there that can assist you with their interpretation of that particular question.
Sure. I'm just curious if they've been trained yet in this since it's so new. But it makes you wonder who wrote the questionnaire because it is rather confusing in my opinion.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, I have a question also. My name's Mary with FlyaCharter. You mentioned the podcast that you're going to send us, which is very nice, and I was wondering if we could get the podcast for the first portion that we missed. I was unable to sign up for the March, I believe it was the March class.
And Angela, I can address that. Yes, I can send that to you. For anybody who would like that, this is a repeat course, but we wanted to have more chance to answer questions. So a lot of the same information will be presented. However, if you want to receive a copy of that course, a podcast, just email me. That is mfravel, M-F-R-A-V-E-L, at WIPP.org, WIPP.org. I'll put my email on the chat. And if anybody has any questions or you want to get access to that podcast, you can just email me directly and I'll send it over to you.
Thank you. And just one more quick question. Do you have to be WeBank certified to self-certify as a WOSB?
You do not.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have some more questions on chat. I can put to you right here. This is an interesting question. Is there more information on sources sought writing samples out there anywhere? It's not exactly related to what we're talking about, but maybe you know of some resources.
Sure. As a matter of fact, Gloria Larkin, who is also a WIP national partner, just conducted a training class a few days ago. So WIP does have an offering on responding to sources sought in market surveys. I don't have the class number readily available, but there is a WIP class. And occasionally, the procurement technical assistance offices throughout the country can assist you with understanding how to respond to a sources sought.
And that course is GiveMeFive 351. It was offered last week. For that course, it's available to all WIP members through the GiveMeFive archive, which is where we hold all of the past podcasts that are made available to WIP members. Also, here's a question from Mona. Who in the government is going to be required to look at this program in their bidding process? And are there any ramifications for non-compliance? Are there any ramifications for non-compliance on the procurement officer's part?
So who should be looking at it are contracting officers or OSDBU directors. So your OSDBU directors is your Office of Small Disadvantaged Business Utilization. There should be one at most of the federal agencies and their offices around the country. If you see an opportunity that you think you are qualified for and you know at least one other or two other women-owned small businesses that you feel are qualified to compete, you can have a discussion with the small business director at that organization, or if the contracting officer's information is available, you can have a discussion with them. Or I know through the 8A program, the SBA will contact them. I actually was visiting the SBA recently, and I think they're very interested in seeing the program succeed, so a phone call to them might be of assistance as well. Are there any ramifications? I'm not sure that there are any ramifications. When it's all said and done, the government has a mission to accomplish, and if they deem that it's in the best interest of their completing their mission to move forward without setting it aside, I'm not sure how much that we can influence that process.
And I had another question that came in on the chat. As a sole proprietor, I don't have the documents you mentioned to upload. Can I still participate?
I'd have to know a little bit more about your business. If you're currently doing business with the federal government, I think I'd have to know a little bit more about your business. They're looking for folks that are incorporated. I don't know very much about sole proprietor. I'm assuming that's like a 1099 contractor. And so you may not have all of the corporate infrastructure pieces in place that the government would be looking for. Sole proprietorship in and of itself doesn't necessarily preclude you from doing business with the federal government, but you would have to prove that you're a woman-owned business.
And I actually noticed just Lynn had put into chat that she's also a sole proprietor and had uploaded her business license.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that may work. I'm seeing a question on the chat from Melissa. She says she went to a conference yesterday and the SBA rep says there's no notification that your documents have been uploaded or accepted. She said they have a manpower issue and cannot review the documentation. The only thing I can tell you, Melissa, is that I actually got an email from them earlier today saying, hey, you forgot this one piece of documentation. So someone's looking at it, and it may be I don't know what part of the country that you're in. Maybe it's a regional issue where they're not able to look at it.
And does anybody else want to answer a question? We have about just a couple minutes remaining here. We have a couple more questions that are on the chat, but I wanted to give an opportunity for one or two last questions from people on the line. Well, do you have any, the security lady asks, Angela, do you have any suggestions for uploading documents that are greater than the allowable file size?
No, but I guess that's an action I should take to figure out if there's a way to do that.
And also, Joyce has asked, my partner is the primary POC for CCR, and she is the alternate POC. Is this okay?
In terms of being able to access the CCR, it's not an issue at all. Those are just your... those are just your point of contacts and the way that you can access the system. That doesn't necessarily determine the way that your company has been structured.
Thank you. And I think that that is about the last question we have. If your question did go unanswered today, you can always contact Angela, whose contact information is on the screen. You can also contact me, and I've provided my email. You will be receiving, as I mentioned, a podcast of this training. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close this session. So, Angela, thank you very much for taking the time with us today to answer all these questions and to come back to us to help further the understanding of this program.
Thank you.
And thank you to everybody else for joining us on the call today. We've really enjoyed your participation and being on the call today. As I mentioned, we will have a follow-up to this call that's going to be looking at what you do once you're registered as a WSB and how you go ahead and make sure those contracting officers know that you're out there. That'll be on May 25th. I encourage you all to look at www.giveme5.com for registration and information. Give Me 5 is just one of the training programs available through WIP. The Women, Money, and Opportunity series combines resources and the wealth of knowledge within the WIP community to educate women business owners in government contracting, access to capital, technology and telecommunications, and energy and environment. So those are all programs that you get to take part in as a member of WIP. And as I mentioned before, we will be sending the podcast and presentation out with this. You'll also get a short survey about your experience with the course today. So I really encourage everybody on the line to take just a minute to give us your feedback. That's how we bring you great courses like this. Women Impacting Public Policy is the voice for women in business in our nation's capital, advocating for and on behalf of women and minorities in business and the legislative processes of our nation, creating economic opportunities and building bridges and alliances to other small business organizations. WIP and American Express Open are dedicated to opening federal procurement opportunities for women business owners. Thank you.